Okay, before we get started today, any questions? Okay, so yes. So the question was the program understanding report, should it be based on the final full project or the individual? All reporting is on the full project, the full set of tasks. We do the lead up individual contest to help kind of help you through the process of building something, but then also to help you understand the problem. So we want analysis reporting to be on the full project, and then you're kind of effectively building subsystem prototypes along the way. Yes. So the question was, is all the whole track going to be set up? We're going to set up the ritual challengers in front of you and the heart. So everything between you and the center will be there. But we probably won't set up the kumoyo beads or the necklace in the center. So it's not in your way. So stuff kind of straight in the middle will be there. Points from those are not available, but there are still kind of obstacles in your way, if you will. But then the peripheral stuff will not be. Yes?
The individual contest, it says that we're given the vibranium LED
keychains. Yep.
Does that mean we have to pick them up off the ground, or we can...
No, so the question was, how do you handle the vibranium keychains? They'll be setting on the start zone. When your time starts, you get to pick them off of that personally and put them in your machine in some way. Okay. So your machine doesn't have to pick them up. But you won't have a chance to put them in your machine before your timer starts. So part of your time allotted is to get them in your machine somehow. Yes?
For the report for the problem understanding, okay, so we're going to have, we have an abstract and introduction, and then just the problem understanding.
Yep. It's a problem understanding report, effectively. There is a component of this for project planning, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So a Gantt chart should show up. And then there's some other tools requested in the outline, so check the outline as well.
And for the final project, whenever we go to the Black Cross team, are we given an easel, or we have to have one?
We'll have one. We'll have easels, and we probably won't have tables for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have easels. If you want a table, bring it, take it home with you, that kind of thing. Other questions? Yes. For the Gantt chart, I make mine just in a spreadsheet system, just coloring the blocks according to the time zones. There are Gantt charts. Gantt charts are used kind of everywhere in terms of like pure business project planning as well, not just engineering projects. So you'll find, I think one's Project Gantt, I think, that has a free version. There's another one that's free open source that does an okay job. It will be a little bit beyond what you really need for this class. The version of the Gantt chart we looked at is kind of really simplified version. It doesn't look at dependencies beyond between tasks, for example. A really professional Gantt chart algorithm will let you make those dependencies, and if you move one, it'll tell you there's an error or something in your planning. So from that perspective, I think it's probably just shade the bars. Like, you can look at the examples on the in the slides. Those are from just a piece of spreadsheet software. Yes?
For the individual project, can we use like a toy core?
Can you use a who?
Like a toy core.
So the question was, can you use like a toy car? Yeah, so like we talked on Tuesday, can you buy pre-built stuff? Yes, you can, as long as it adheres to all the other rules. So is it less than $100 for anybody to get that off the street? Is it not using stored energy? All those other rules still apply. Yes.
Can we test our vehicle?
Yep. So basically, you're asking about open hours. Only about half of you, a little more than half of you, voted for open hours. So our first hours will be 2 to 5 tomorrow. Next door, where those of you that met with me next door for reports, since 3:16, we will have some hours over the weekend. I'll post the full schedule after class today. Yes.
Receipts or lists of cost or anything for this individual.
So the question was, how do we show that we're under cost, or do we need to show that we're under cost? Basically, we'll ask you, if we think you're approaching 100, we'll ask you, and you need to be ready to prove it.
Okay.
Right. So we're not checking actively every trial. Show us your receipts. At this point, how many times we've run this course, we have a pretty good idea of what a machine that costs more than $100 looks like. Other questions? Okay, cool. So the first part of today, we're going to review those couple in-class exercises that we didn't get a chance to finish actually in class the other day. So the first one was in-class exercise 9. It was actually an extension of in-class exercise 8. I posted 8 not too long after class on Tuesday. There was a small, not really a bug, it was an algorithmic bug a little bit in terms of the timing when you're reading the buttons. So basically it was kind of running too fast and sensing one button press as multiple ones. So we kind of corrected for that in the version that's posted. So in class exercise 9, basically you are tasked with doing kind of the same thing. And basically, this should be every second, sorry. So basically, wait for a button, push a button, and then wait for it to be pressed again and spit out the time. In this case, we're going to, every 1 second, light up one of the LEDs on the board to kind of as an indicator of how much time is passing. Okay, and then if more than 5 seconds elapses, print out you took too long and kind of start the whole process over. Okay, so let's walk through kind of how this code sets up. That's going to need to be, let me fix this before we forget. So we're going to set up those 4 LEDs. Doing it this way, we're going to set up that input pin for the push button. In this case, we're plugged into X4. And then the problem statement says turn on the green LED while you're waiting for that first button press. So we went ahead and we're going to go ahead and turn that on kind of in the setup part of our code. And this is the piece of the code that's kind of waiting for that first button press. Right? So we have a while true, so that's going to keep looping forever. And every time it loops through, we're going to read the state of the button. If the button is pressed, we save the current time in milliseconds into start time. We did. And turn the green LED off. Okay. We're also going to print out and say, let ourselves know that we read that button. We're actually going to sleep for 200 milliseconds. This is what I added beyond what we discussed on Tuesday after that first button press. So this is the finest resolution we're going to be able to have with this kind of inelegant solution to this problem, if you will. Right? But that's only 2/10 of a second. Maybe that's okay for our application. And what we're going to do is actually set a Boolean of called button timing to true, knowing we're basically entering. What that's going to do is enter another loop looking for the second button press. Okay. In this case, inside that second loop, we're looking for the button to be pressed again. Right. If it is pressed, then we do that first piece. We basically count, figures out the timing. Okay. If it's not pressed, then this piece of the code runs. And you look, we're keeping track. The one thing that's a little bit different, let's see, is... I cut that piece of the code out. Let me show it to you in Atom. Maybe that's going to be easier. And there's a lot more commenting. So when I show you guys stuff on the slides, I kind of maybe make this explicit. There's actually usually more commenting in the file itself in GitHub, because it can fit there and it can't really fit on the slide. Right. So you see here is a really full explanation of the algorithm that we're running. Okay. So we read the first button press, set button timing to true, and this button timing loop begins. Okay. So inside this button timing loop, right, it's true because we set it here. The button timing loop, if you notice, is embedded under the button being pressed the first time effectively. Right. So this second while loop is not running until we press the button the first time. Okay. Reading it, one thing that's a little bit different is we're calculating the elapsed time every time through this while loop. Okay. If we get the button again, we press the button to stop, calculate, and print out the elapsed time. Okay. If that button is not pressed, then we have this series of if-elifs that light LEDs according to how much time has elapsed. So if more than 5 seconds has elapsed, we print out you took too long, like we wanted to, turn off all the LEDs, set button timing to false, which will cause that loop, right? That's true, it bounces out, checks this thing, that's false now, so it goes back out to the main loop again. It starts checking the first time through. Okay. If that's not true, we walk through turning on one extra LED on every 1,000 milliseconds. Right. So every LED coming on is 1 second. We know we're kind of getting close to running out of time. Okay. This is kind of the reason I kind of set this up and wanted you guys to see this. Is this something you can do with your code, for example? If something needs to happen in a certain amount of time, you can be indicating to yourself how much time is left or use the LEDs to indicate the state of your system. So you can see that without having to be plugged into the REPL while you're testing your robot. Okay, so you get those 4 LEDs, and you have some more in your kit. We'll go through probably a little bit extra on Thursday, maybe, a week from the day, how to do kind of pure digital off-board outputs. We already looked at it a little bit with the buzzer. It's similar. So you can have a lot of LEDs, actually, letting yourself know what the system is doing when you can't be plugged in with the REPL. And you also have that buzzer, as we talked. So what I would do, what I would suggest, if you worked on this and couldn't quite get it, or even if you worked on it and did get it, take a look at how I went about solving it. Again, this is not a particularly elegant solution, but it does work reasonably well. And compare your solution to mine and see what's run through both of them. I think it's a good idea. Talk through in class example 10. This one, it was set up and intended to be something like how you're going to have to read the start button of the track. Right? So the track, remember, you're going to plug into our track. It's sitting there effectively low, not connect, not closed at all, until we press the button to start the trial. When we press the button to start the trial, we close a relay on all 4 sides, basically pushing a push button for your system. Right? So what your device is going to have to do at the starting with the preliminary competition all the way through the final, is be plugged into the track and looking for that signal to close. Looking for a push button, effectively. So what we want to do is this code set up, basically sit there and wait for the push button to be pressed. When it's pressed, just move the servo to some angle, don't specify here, and then only allow that to happen kind of once per 30 seconds. Right, so that's kind of to emulate that it only can run for 30 seconds. The setup here hopefully looks pretty familiar. Let me fix this so I don't forget in the PDF version of these guys. Not sure what happened to my parentheses or my quotation marks, sorry. Script in the paste. So we set up that input pin. We're using the same push button we had before for the last couple examples. We're using the servo plugged into X1, which we know is servo 1, PYB at servo 1, and the problem says start the servo at 0 degrees. So we want to be at 0 degrees to start, so that becomes part of kind of our setup piece of the code. Okay. Then what we're doing, we have another while true loop. We're sitting there waiting. We always want to be looking for that button to be pressed. Right? We're reading the button. As soon as it's pressed, input state goes high, so this if statement is now true. So we run what's indented over within that if statement. So in this case, I just move to 30 degrees. And then I sleep for 30 seconds. So I do what I need to do and sleep long enough to where the operation can't happen again within a 30-second time span. Okay. And then I move back to zero after that 30 seconds elapsed, and it'll keep looping after that. Okay. Remember that during this sleep time, or let me ask you guys, what's happening during that sleep? Nothing is happening. Processor is sitting there spinning. Right. So this is not a really generalizable way to solve this problem in a lot of ways for your final contest. What you can do in the comments in the full file is have some sleep at the end of your code that so you know that you're going to be outside of that 30-second time. Because what happens, remember our push button, effectively, is closed for the whole 30 seconds. Right? So if this code is running and we don't have that sleep there, it's going to keep running every time for that 30 seconds. Right? Because it's going to see that button closed the whole 30 seconds. And if what you had in here for your device is something more complex than just moving the servo, it might start that process. It's going to read the button and start that process at 29.9 seconds. Right. Your device will then continue moving or whatever your algorithm is after 30 seconds and you get DQ'd. Okay. So make sure that when you read the start button, you're kind of reading it once, effectively. Or you're looking for it to go low, and you can shut your machine off manually that way. So you can time it, or you can use the state of that button. When it transitions back to open, you can read that and stop as well. So again, I would go off, try to make this code work on your actual system. Right, just looking at it on the screen is not going to do so much good for you. Right. Questions about either one of those examples? Who got those working? One or two folks? Okay. Okay. So if you didn't get it working, then definitely look at my code and take a look. This is one way to do it. There's a bunch of different ways. Okay. We talked through this again. We were kind of in a hurry at the end of class. I wanted to point it out again because it is critical to making sure we don't burn up the stuff we're going to give you today. Okay. So looking at this piece of code, what's going to happen? Maybe you remember from Tuesday.
Zero.
Right, you're going to divide by zero eventually. Right? 10th time through, counter is going to be 10. 11th time through, counter is going to be 10. So we started at zero. Whenever counter gets to 10, we have a divide by zero error. The processor is going to yell at you, say, I can't do that, and actually would quit your program. The reason that's important for us is that basically the motor driver you're going to get, you're going to hand off controlling that motor. And it's kind of common to do this. You're going to tell a motor, hey, turn at whatever RPM or turn at whatever percent speed. And then that motor driver, this handling driving the motor, just does that until you tell it to do something different. Right? So if you had told before this value, you know, before value, run the motor at 50% speed, then your program crashes. That motor is going to keep running because you're not telling it to stop. Or you haven't told it to stop. Okay. So in order to fix that problem, we're going to use try except finally kind of construction. Okay. So what try except does is basically say you can wrap whatever you want to do inside a try. So kind of try to do this. And the except part is if something goes wrong there, run the code that's indented under this one. Okay. So basically, we can have our entire algorithm here, start the motors, whatever. If we get some algorithmic error, some kind of syntax error, the program crashes here, this guy's going to run. Stop my motors belongs down here in our example. Okay. So that way, if you have some kind of syntax error, something goes wrong in your script, we're still stopping the motors and not burning stuff up. It's a really common construction. We use this all the time in the robots in our lab. There's an extension to that that's even better. And you'll notice most of the code, example code on GitHub with the motors stuff you're going to get today actually puts the motor stop stuff in finally. Because what's in finally always runs, whether you got an error or not. Okay. So try to do some stuff. You can do some stuff if you get an error. And finally, whether you didn't get an error or not, what's indented under finally will always run. Okay. So we can stop motors turn off motors, things like that, in the fine lead block. Okay. And just as a reminder to point this out, if you're controlling the hardware, it's your responsibility to stop it. Okay. So we're going to wrap our motor code in tri-accept. We're going to have you're getting an electric linear actuator. You're going to do the same for that. And generally, that finally will turn off all the motors. Okay, so what we're going to do from now is get with your team, find a place somewhere in the room. I'm going to walk next door and go get our kits, the stuff we're going to hand out to you. What you're going to get from each team is this sheet. Okay, sheet has a list of the components you're going to get, and then for each component there are kind of four blank lines in two different columns. Okay. First column is kind of headed received. One of your team members needs to initial in the left blank underneath the received column saying, yes, I received that part. Okay? We'll come by, one of us come by, and initial saying, yes, you received that part. Okay? Then at the bottom, there are four signature blanks. I think we only have teams of three. So each of your team members needs to write your name, put your ULID, and sign your name. And what you're saying is, yes, we got everything from you. All right? That's why this is important. And that's important because if we have this and you say you got everything, we want everything back. Okay? If we don't get everything back from you, you have an incomplete for this course until we do. Okay? Things can be replaced, they're not super expensive, but we need to get everything back. All right? Is that clear? So this is your way of saying make sure you have everything today. Because if you come to us in May, or April, I guess, come to us the end of April and say, oh, we never got that, this is going to say differently if you signed it today. And this is our contract for you getting everything today. All right? So you guys get in your teams. I'll go grab the kits. All right. So let's walk through what everything is. You have a round thing, and it looks like this. A small DC motor. Who didn't get one? Oh, sorry. You have a square thing that looks like this. A stepper motor. This large DC motor. Large DC motor. Blue circuit board. Motor driver. Power supply is power supply. Okay. You should have a small screwdriver. It's self-explanatory, I hope. You have what we call a power connector. It's a barrel jack on one side, screw terminals on the other. You should have a little white block. It's a terminal block. Okay. You should have a sensor that looks like this. It's the IR sensor, the main sensor part, cables. Okay, those are separate items on the list. You should have two linear actuator mounts. Make sure you have all the hardware. Okay. Should be a bolt fitting on the side, on the middle. Okay. And we will bring around finally one of these. There's an electric linear actuator. Linear actuator on your sheet. All right. So lay everything out. We'll bring through the paper to each team. with the paper, initial to make sure you have everything. If you have questions, wave one of us down. We'll help you identify things. Actually, let me have that one back so I can get you one in the box. One with, it's got mounts on it, sorry. One with a box. Linear actuator. Linear actuator. Just hold on right now. Linear actuator. For your linear actuator you just got or you are getting, try to hold on to the box for us, please. One second. Let me finish handing these out first. Can you pass one to those guys, too? For this. Linear actuator mounts. Hold on, wait, let me finish hand stuff out. You guys got one? You guys get one yet?
No. What are y'all missing?
Initial, and we're initial to say we agree with you.
And one of us initials after it.
Oh,
terminal block. So, question. Yes. No, that's it.
Okay.
The hardware is already screwed in on yours. Like the at the top part, like the.
Oh, okay.
So you unscrew that, and it fits onto the linear actuator you just got.
We had a question. So, like, does it matter if this is all like?
Well, it's fine right now. We don't use those at all. Yeah.
Nice to have the option.
Yep. I got you. Hold on a second. Okay, on all your motors, take a look at the connections on the backside. Wiggle them a little bit, make sure they're secure. If they're not, we're going to ask you to keep that motor, but to let us know, and we'll get it soldered back on for you. So that's one thing. For all your motors, check the connections on the backside. Okay, make sure they're secure, particularly the two brush DC motors. All right. We'll ask you to hang on to the motor. Come see us during open lab hours. I'll get it soldered back on for you. That's one purpose of those open lab hours. If you have problems with your components, come then. We'll get them fixed or swapped out for you. Okay. If you find one that's missing wires right now, we'll get you set up. Okay, so those kits, those are yours until the end of the semester. Take care of them. Make sure we get everything back. Okay. If something breaks while you're using it, that's fine. Let us know. Come see us. We'll try to figure out why it broke and then give you a new one. Okay. If you keep breaking things, we're probably going to ask you to start paying for things that you broke. All right. So if you break the motor once a week, there's something going on there we need to try to figure out and maybe motivate you to not break anymore by making you pay for the next one. So we do reserve that right. We'll replace things if they break. Things wear out and do break. These parts get abused, as you might expect. Blame the upperclassmen on that abuse. Things not working quite right. We'll replace them. Again, we'll replace them. You start breaking things regularly, we need to figure out what's going on and a way to stop that from happening. Okay. The other big piece of advice, as you're working through this stuff, we've talked through parts of the kit that you bought, kind of what the function is. The closer you can stay to the intended function of a part, the better it's going to work for you. For example, you got a stepper motor today. We talked a little bit about stepper motors, right? Stepper motors are not meant for really driving stuff and big torque at any kind of speed. They're holding torque and positioning, right? Those DC motors you got are meant for kind of driving stuff. They're not going to be so great at precise positioning necessarily, right? Your linear actuator obviously is good at linear motion. The servos in your kit you have to move. They're going to work fine if you use them within the parameters they're designed to be used. You start slamming against one edge or the other, you're going to have trouble. You put a lot of torque on that servo, it's not going to behave. Okay, so that's your job as a designer to work within the constraints of the items that you have at your disposal. Okay. So keep that in mind. That's it. Okay, all of you just got IR sensor you have. It's wired up like this. It is just the analog sensor, actually. And it gives back an analog voltage based on how far things are away from it. Okay? So we'll flash back to this screen in just a second. As I said, it's just an analog sensor. So you read it just like you were reading the flex sensor, just like you read the force-sensitive resistor, just like you read the potentiometer. Those same functions apply. Okay? It's going to output 3.1 volts when things are 4 centimeters away from it, and 0.3 when things are 30 centimeters away. Okay. Outside of that range, you can't really trust the values of that sensor because that's not what it's designed for. Right? That IR sensor you have is optimized and designed to operate from 4 to 30 centimeters. At those, I thought that was the most useful range for your devices. So teams in the past have used this to sense the inner zone cutout as it spun around. Right? Point it down. You get close enough to that, you'll know, be able to distinguish between when that hole opens. Right? Teams have used this to sense how close they are to the middle, if they were driving or extending out. Right? So you get information about distance. You just have to be sure that when you're asking for that distance, it's in the range that makes sense for that sensor. Okay? And the relationship between those two points is not necessarily linear. Okay, so it's not necessarily a straight line between those points. There's actually some code online that will help you figure out how your sensor operates. Okay, you get to map out that distance. All right? So, knowing that it's just an analog sensor, it should be wired like this. So black and red are power and ground. Right, just like we've done for all those analog sensors. The yellow is the signal wire. Right, so that's going to go to X22, just like our other in this case, other sensors. So get this guy wired up real quick. Okay. So it seems like most of you have this wired up. All right. Let's look at an in-class exercise. Remember, it's just an analog sensor. So how do you read an analog sensor? Some kind of ADC. What do I do with the ADC? I have to set it up as an analog pin to start out with, kind of the setup part. And then what's the command to read it? It's the command to read it. Read, there you go. That read is the function, okay? So, spend a little bit of time on this exercise, right? So, connect your push button as well. So you don't want to do anything until the button is pressed. So again, we're kind of simulating the button on the track being pressed. You're waiting to do something until you get a signal from the track. Okay? Once that button is pressed, I want you to print out the IR sensor value every 100 milliseconds for 30 seconds. Okay? Okay? If objects are closer to 6 inches, turn on the red LED. Kind of warning, things are close to me. Otherwise, the green LED should be on. Hey, there's nothing within 6 inches of me. It's good. It's green. Okay. After 30 seconds, turn it off. Everybody understand what we're asking for? All right. Okay, so let's talk about the algorithmic part of this and see if we're all on the right track. Okay, so that kind of wait for the button to be pressed thing, and we're kind of running this forever and ever. What does that tell you your main kind of construct should be? A while true type loop, right? So I want to be checking the button over and over again forever, basically. Okay. When the button is pressed. So what is that? Otherwise, if the button is pressed, what does that tell you the button check should be? If, yeah, right. Then we're going to read the IR sensor. How do we read the IR sensor? Well, we read. We just talked through that, right? As long as we set that up the right way. We print its value to the REPL. That's just print, right? If objects are closer than 6 inches, okay? So how do we know if something's closer than 6 inches? Yeah, so we get that information from the IR sensor itself, right? We don't know exactly what that value is. I haven't told you what that value is. I don't actually know what it is for your particular sensor. It's going to vary a little bit from one of these sensors to the next. So for our purposes right now, put something about 6 inches in front of it and see what that reading is. Okay. And then something a little bit longer and see which way, does it get higher voltage or lower voltage as things get closer or farther away. Okay. So what does this tell you if, you know, you said this came from the voltage, this came from the, you know, either the voltage or the, you could get it straight from the ADC reading itself if you wanted to. Right? So if that condition is true, then red LED dot on, right? Else, turn the green one on, right? So you're also going to have to, the one, you're gonna, that's kind of if that thing is pressed, right? The only other little wrinkle here is you have to keep track of the time and make sure that you only do this for 30 seconds. And there are a few ways to do that. We talked last lecture about keeping track of time, comparing time, right? Okay. The other dirtier way you could do this is, you know that basically in here we want to do this 100 every 100 milliseconds, right? So I could be looping here, reading the sensor, right? I know I want a while. I'm going to need a while loop there, right? Because I want to read the sensor for a while, right? If I know every one of those loops is 100 milliseconds, I can do the math and say, how many times through that loop do I want to run? And if I have a loop with a counter, what kind of structure is that? A for loop. Right. So if I know I'm reading the thing every 100 milliseconds, right? How many 100 milliseconds is in 30 seconds? I can write a for loop about read the sensor, print it out, do the check, wait 100 milliseconds, time sleep 100, time sleep underscore milliseconds 100, loop back up. You could also explicitly account for this time like we did on Tuesday. Okay. But again, I think I'm going to strongly advocate to you guys to not just start typing away right away and what's happening. Okay, plan out what you're going to do. Think about the actual algorithm before you write code. Okay, think about what you're going to write in your report. Do an outline before you write the report. Okay? It's the same kind of idea. Think about what you're going to write, what you're going to do, and then figure out the syntax of doing it. And if you can thought about this clearly and can explain it to someone in plain English, then you understand it well enough to try to match the syntax to it. Right? If you just start typing away and you're not sure of the algorithm, yeah, then you don't know, is the algorithm wrong? Is the syntax wrong? Which one's wrong? Okay. So let's. I want to walk through, at least introduce you to it. We'll come back to it on Thursday, a week from today after the contest on Tuesday. But I want to show you this. I think go off. You guys are with your teams now. You have a team of stuff. Go off on this, and this is a nice exercise to get acquainted working with your teammates. Try to figure this one out. Okay. This motor shield is actually intended for use with Arduino boards. We have them left over from when we were using Arduinos. We have custom boards on the way. Some manufacturing delays on those. So we're still going to use these this term. And basically what it has on board, this center chip here, handles outputting that PWM command to control the motors. Right. Your Pi board is going to connect to this guy via a protocol called I2C, or hear some people say I2C. This motor controller is set up where, hey, you're going to tell the motor, go at 50% speed. And then the Pi board doesn't have to worry about that motor anymore. It's going to keep running at 50% speed until you tell it to do something different. Or the power goes away. Right. You have motor outputs on both sides, labeled M1, M2, M3, M4, pairs of terminals. Okay. The two pins labeled SCL and SDA are the I2C pins. That's what we're actually going to connect to the Pi board. Okay. You have a new power supply you got today. It's 12 volts DC at 5 amps. That's going to plug into here. And we'll talk about how that happens in just a second. The connection looks, the kind of core connection will look like that. So you have that power connector up there. The green power connector has a banana plug on one side and screw terminals on the other. And have wires from that over to the board. Okay. You're going to have the I2C connection. Two pins Y, 9, and 10 on your Pi board. And then you're going to have VN and ground over to this board as well, connecting to 5 volts and ground. The 5 volts and ground power the logic level of this board. The 12 volts from your power supply is what gets fed to the motors at the right times. Okay. And that's good practice. You want to keep power separate from logic power whenever at all possible. Okay. To control this board, and what you're going to need to do before next Thursday is go to this GitHub address. It's from that company, Adafruit. They have a library to use this board. Okay. You want to get all the Pi, the files with extension .mpy that are in that GitHub repository. Right. And you're going to copy them to the PYB flash on your microcontroller. Okay. And what that does is make those files available for that Python import. Okay. The MPY is just kind of a special version that's compiled down to be smaller package than a pure .py file is. Right, so you're just saving memory space by using those. Okay. So your PYB flash should look something like this after you've dropped those 4.mpy files from the GitHub repository on it. Okay. To use that I2C, we're going to import this library called machine. It's actually the next evolution of the PYB library, but it's not completely finished converting. So you need to initialize the I2C communication protocol with machine.i2c and those pin numbers, and that part should never have to change for your code. Okay? As long as you're wired the way I just showed a couple slides ago. All that's doing is setting up the communication between your Pi board and the motor driver. Okay? to drive either one of the DC motors you have. Right? They can be plugged into M1, as this guy is, M2, M3, or M4. Okay. Does it matter which direction, order you plug those wires in? Yes. Maybe, I'm going to say. You say yes, what's going to change if you reverse the direction? Rotation. Okay. So just plugging in it backwards will change the rotation for a positive voltage. But we have control over, in the code, which way we're turning the motor. Right. So yeah, we'll change how the motor operates relative to the direction you're telling it to move in the code. Okay. So if you take things apart to try to fix something and put it back together, make sure you get them back the same way you had if you want the code to work the exact same way. Otherwise, all you have to do is switch direction. Right. One way or the other. Okay. I want to point out, you can break this motor driver. This motor driver is the most fragile piece you have in your entire kit. Okay. One of the most common way is to strip too much wire from motor connections or the power connections to the shield itself. Look at that in just a second. The other main problem is keeping motors stalled, keeping motors powered up while they're stalled. Okay. So you attach, you have some design, you want your arm to move and it gets stuck somewhere. The motor doesn't have enough current to move anymore. It's called stalled motor. Okay. And what's happening in that condition, the motor is asking for as much current as that board and power supply can give it. Okay. That's when motors draw their most current, is when they're stalled. Okay. So if you keep it stalled and keep trying to drive that motor, the board's going to be the weak link. You're going to get overheating, basically, and you'll see a nice smoke coming out of one of those motor drivers. Okay. You're going to cook it. The other way you can do that is reversing the motor without stopping it first. So if you're going full speed one direction and tell it to go full speed the other direction, there's some bad stuff that happens then too. Okay. So if you do one of these things, you might end up with a board that looks like that one. So you can see on this board, these two chips on the outside are what actually handle driving the motor. So that guy got a little toasty. Here's probably one of the worst ones I've seen. This guy was probably glowing pretty red. It probably did catch fire. Okay? So you can ruin this board. All right. Please try not to. Okay. So this is from last spring, 1 year ago. We went through $425. We were almost $420 worth of motor driver boards. Okay, let's not do that this semester, please. Okay. So when you're stripping wire for those motor driver boards, right, you're going to connect to these terminals, these screw terminals. You don't want no conductor showing outside of that terminal. Right, all the conducting part of the wire when you get it connected to that screw terminal should be inside. From the terminal out is all insulation. Okay, so it takes only stripping an eighth of an inch of wire to get a good connection in those screw terminals and have insulated wire all the way out. Okay, let me show you, for example, if you look at this picture of the stepper motor, this is bad. Right? You still have conductor sticking out each one of these terminals. So if something happens to lay across these guys while you're telling this motor to move, what's going to happen there? Where's the current going to flow? It's 12 volts to ground. Right? That's bad. That is going to burn that board up in split second. Okay? Stalling the motor will cause it to heat up, and if you keep it stalled long enough, it burns out. So you have some leeway there. If you strip too much wire and these conductors touch, it's going up right there on the spot. Okay? That one clear? Let's try to avoid that problem. Okay. So let's step back to the DC motor. Okay. Once you have those Adafruit libraries on your Pi board, controlling the motor is totally easy. They're handling all the hard part of it for you. Okay? So you just have to import motor. that's going to say, hey, I want to use that Adafruit motor, DC motor library. You're going to have to tell it what I2C thing you're going to use. So we defined this in the previous slide, that I2C. Okay? Kind of like how this looked kind of familiar. And then to return the motor, it's just motors.speed, whatever motor number you want to move, and then a number between 0 and 495, representing 0 to 100% velocity, 100% speed. Okay. So this library handles all the low-level stuff for you. You get to just tell the motor what speed to run, basically. Okay. You have motors. Notice that M1 is motor 0. The M2 port on your board is motor 1 in terms of the code, and so forth that way. Okay. You can stop it by issuing speed of 0, or you can issue a brake command to stop it. Okay. As we said on the previous slide, make sure you stop the motor for a split second before you reverse direction. Okay, so don't go from full speed. Oh, sorry. Speeds were minus 495, minus 100 to 100. Sorry. So don't go from minus 495 one line, and the very next line go speed 495. If bad things are going to happen. This is all the DC motors. So you have two brush, the motors you have are brush DC motors, brush DC gear motors. The small one is slow. Just to let you guys know, it will be running really slow even at full speed. I chose torque over speed. I thought that was more useful for you guys. Okay. As we'll see, this will work for those two motors, large and small DC motor, and we'll actually control the linear actuator the same way. Because internally, it actually is just a brush DC motor. Stepper motor, again, is used for positioning tasks. You have this size is a NEMA 17 size. You have 200 steps per revolution, right? And the connection of this should be kind of in this pattern, right? Should follow something like this. And as you saw, so our connection for that stepper should look something like this one. The stepper commands are equally easy. In this case, you import stepper, attach it up to the I2C communication protocol, just like we did. So that next up the next line does. You can control two steppers, you only have one. Okay? So it's index 0 if it's connected to 1 and 2, M1 and M2, or 1 if it's connected to M3 and M4. Okay? You have to set up the steppers with this getStepper with the motor number you want to control. And then once you have that stepper saved, there are a few different ways that you can control it. Our basic way to control that stepper motor is to make it move one step at a time. So this one step command says move the stepper motor one step. Okay? There are a few ways we can do this. We can do single step. That's going to energize, just like we saw on the slides, the next coil around the circle and move you one step. Okay. There's a mode called double step. We'll actually energize more than one coil at the same time and move you around corresponding one. So double step gets you more torque because it's energizing multiple coils at a time. Okay. There's also a mode called micro step. That divides every step into 16ths, and it does that by basically putting a sine wave through each of the coils. Okay. So you get smoother operation at the expense of speed. Okay. Each of these moves it one of those units of steps. So this will move 1/16th of a step for each one step command. So you also get some resolution there in terms of controlling positioning. Okay. Those one step commands will move one step. So if you're a stepper motor, that you have is a 200-step motor, how many times do you have to issue one step to make one revolution? 200 times. So if I wanted to do that, I could do that in a for loop. Right. This will spin that motor forward in single-step mode 200 steps, one revolution. Okay. Again, this is good for positioning. Okay. To set direction, it's just forward or backwards, as you see in this slide. Linear actuator, as we said already, is just a DC motor inside. It does have a potentiometer on it as well. Okay. So there are actually five cables coming out of that linear actuator. Red and black are the motor part. The yellow, white, blue are the potentiometer. So you can get information for that potentiometer about that actuator's length. And there's code that will help you read that. It's just another, it's just a potentiometer, works like your trim pot. Okay. It's an analog input. You read it as an analog input, get information about length. Okay. So that would look something like this. The code's available. Okay. Okay. Open lab hours. Start tomorrow at 2 o'clock. I'll be next door. Track will be set up. Come test your device. Look for posting later on this evening with the schedule of open hours that'll be the same through the final contest. All right? Jacko stuff. Keep working on this coding stuff. If you have questions about anything leading into Tuesday, please let us know.